God appears to Isaiah where we'd expect God to be, in the temple. But it's always struck me that the temple isn't anywhere near big enough to contain or define God. Only the hem of God's robe fits in it. God's just so much more immense than this human construction can contain. And Isaiah, seeing even this glimpse of God and of the fiery beings flying around God, is overwhelmed and afraid. I do not belong here. I am unworthy. I am sinful. And more than that, the people I live among, the people of my nation, are unworthy. Our lips are unclean. We're full of lies. We've failed. And none of us, not I, not them, none of us has any right to be in God's presence. That's where Isaiah is at this moment. But God isn't having it. God isn't having that. God touches Isaiah and says, "No, you're clean. You're forgiven. You're worthy to be here." And then God says, "And I got some work that needs doing. I got work. To speak the truth, even if no one listens. Do my work. Keep doing my work, even when it's discouraging. Even when no one responds, leave the results up to me." And I think about what would have happened if at this point Isaiah had said, "Nope, still unworthy. I'm out of here." I mean, even though, from what we know, Isaiah didn't get a lot of results in his lifetime from his preaching, his words have continued to speak through the centuries. How many people have heard that message that the people of his own time weren't very interested in? But it's Isaiah who tells us the young woman will conceive and bear a son. It's Isaiah who tells us the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. It's Isaiah who tells us they will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And it's Isaiah's words that Jesus turns to again and again. Words that live through the centuries, even though he didn't see much of the effect of his work. Now, God appears to Simon Peter where Peter doesn't expect God to be. Well, he's at work. Or at least doing the part of the work he can control, because things haven't been going in his way. He and his co-workers have fished all night, but they have caught nothing. And they are frustrated, and they're exhausted. And since they can't control whether they can catch fish, they're doing what they can control. They're cleaning their nets. They're taking care of the tools. And I resonate with this. I had a colleague at Wartburg, and she was also a friend of mine in graduate school, who said that when she was writing her dissertation, her house had never been so clean. I can relate to that, you know, when you're just not making any progress at something, and so you just go do something that you can do. That's what Peter's up to. He's cleaning his house. And then in the middle of his exhaustion and discouragement, Jesus shows up. And he commandeers Peter's boat as a pulpit, and redirects Peter from his discouragement about his utter lack of success to his role as ship's captain. You know, put out into the shallow water here, and I'm going to preach for a while, and perforce, Peter's got to listen. And when Jesus has finished preaching, he orders Peter to put out into the deep water and let down his nets. And Peter answers with all the exhaustion and discouragement he feels. Master, we have worked all night and have caught nothing. And I can relate to that right now, too. Kurt, I've been thinking this week about a comment you made a few years ago when we were at a protest, right? And we were out there protesting for justice and for humane treatment of people. And you said, I've been doing this since college. I've been singing these same songs. Will anything ever change? That's where Peter is at this moment, you know? I've been out all night. I've been fishing. I've been doing everything I know to do. No luck. What's the point? But Peter obeys Jesus' command, right? Master, if you say so, I'll do it. I'll go out there. I'll go out in the deep water. I'll let down my nets. I can hear him muttering under his breath, right? This is stupid. It's ridiculous. What does he know about fishing anyway? Can't he see that we're exhausted? We need rest, not more work. But he healed my mother-in-law. Maybe, just maybe, he can make this worth it. And when, despite his discouragement and doubt, he and his partners not only catch a few fish, but so many that both boats are filled to the point of sinking, Peter falls at Jesus' knees. And he tries to send Jesus away. I'm a sinful man. I'm unworthy to be in your presence. Go away. This isn't a safe place for me. But you know, Jesus doesn't listen to Peter. He doesn't let Peter's sense of unworthiness stop him any more than he let Peter's exhaustion and discouragement stop him. Don't be afraid, he says. Don't be afraid. I'm not about fear. I'm about love. From now on, you got more work to do. You'll be catching people. So Peter and James and John leave everything, and they follow Jesus. And this moment, this call to fish for people, is just the beginning of a long process. It'll be a long time before Peter and James and John actually catch any people. First, they need to listen and to learn and to grow. And their first attempts at catching people don't go especially well. They're not effective healers. They're more likely to try to call down fire from heaven on people than to actually, you know, go out there and do the work of catching them. They get angry at people and frustrated, and they fail over and over again. And Jesus didn't give up on them. He keeps working with them in all their failures and doubts and discouragements, and he shows them new ways. And he sticks with them through their anger and their ugliest moments. Until eventually, after lots of messing up, they become faithful disciples who have learned to trust his love. And at last, in Acts, we learn they do bring in a huge catch of people. It's a very long journey getting there. You know, in Paul's words today, we hear another just glimpse of this God who finds people in the most unusual places. I mean, in Paul's case, he's on the road to go hurt people. He's on the road to go persecute people. And Jesus shows up and says, Paul, how long are you going to keep trying this? I got something else for you than this hurtful path you're on. And Paul, too, knows that it's not about his own giftedness here. It's not about his worth, his sense of his own value. Paul, speaking as the apostle, says, I was the most unworthy of people to have Jesus show up. And yet Jesus did. And Jesus called me right in the middle of my attacks on others, right in the middle of the harm and the evil I was doing. Jesus showed up and turned my life around and said, oh, Paul, I've got work for you. And that's still our story today, isn't it? God keeps coming to us wherever we are, at worship, at work, even when we're being ugly and hurtful and harmful to others. In all kinds of places, God keeps showing up and says, don't be afraid. Stop telling me you're unworthy. I make you whole. I make you worthy. I love you. And you have work to do. No matter how discouraged and tired you are, no matter how much you say, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm not seeing anything change. God asks us to trust that God is with us in this work and that God is the one who brings the results. And we don't see it sometimes. Sometimes we don't live to see the results of the work we do. That doesn't mean our work doesn't matter. It still matters. If God calls us to it, it matters. And sometimes we see the abundance. Sometimes we see all those fish hauled into the boat. Sometimes we don't. But that's not the point, is it? It's that God calls us. God calls us and says, get out there. Love. Speak my truth. Work for justice. Love people and trust me that you are worthy, you are beloved. Don't be afraid. It's with God's help that we do our work. And that's why when we take our baptismal vows, we don't say, I will. We say, I will with God's help. So my friends, today, let's say it again. I will with God's help. I will with God's help. Amen.